Olivia Amundson and myself, Robin Salverson, were able to catch up with Dr. Blue Johnson, a veterinarian with West River Vet Services in Headinger, North Dakota, to get his thoughts on the current conditions out in the country, along with some of the cases that they've been seeing in the vet clinic this spring during calving, and also get his thoughts on what may be influencing these calving difficulties. With that, Olivia is going to kick off this episode.
I'm super curious, like, what is, like, the grass situation out there? What are things going to look like this summer? I mean, are guys going to be able to sustain their cattle out there? I mean, my family hauls all of our cattle out west, you know, for the entire summer to calve and all that. And we're getting real nervous right about now. I mean, the cows are going to go out there, but so are a lot of truckloads of hay. So I'm just real curious at where things are at, what you're seeing.
It's a challenge, especially on the forage side of things, grazing forage anyhow. I mean, I think because of the limited forage that was put up, or I'll take a step back, good quality forage that was put up that we're used to, we've been battling a lot of stuff. There's a big diversity of how cows are managed out here. I mean, we've used the term, you know, the farmer cow. So, I mean, where guys are that diversified into farming and ranching, it seems like they always got better feed. There was always more supplements or whatever it may be. And then the true rancher, the minimal farming, they live and die off of the forage that's available on the grass. Usually a little rougher country, more forage from, I mean, just pasture setting. And unfortunately, in some of these areas, the rain came way too late. The little bit we got last year was, like, you know, late in the fall, October, November-ish, we got a little moisture. There's been almost no snow cover for most of our production area, which, you know, Southwest North Dakota, Northwest South Dakota areas. And because of that, we see, I mean, well, extremely overgrazed pastures. And even if we would have got a bunch of snow, I think we had so much blow off that it probably wouldn't have done what we wanted anyhow, because it's just, it's to the ground. And I sympathize, because it was either that or get rid of the cows. So we managed as best we could, but if we're unlimited, I mean, moisture, which it's lining up to be that way right now, if we don't get some really good spring moisture, we're gonna have a difficult time growing grass again. It's gonna be stunted. It's gonna take, I don't know how much more, Robin might have an answer of where we're at on something like that. But I would say if we're used to, you know, 4 inches of rain in May to get us going, or April, May, it might be almost double that to really see our production back to what we need. And that might be a stretch to ask for that this year. So discussions I've had with clients have been, we need to be planning drought management now, not when we try to turn out, because those pastures got really overgrazed are not going to be producing as much, and they need to be, you know, allowed to catch up if we can. That's an easy answer for a vet to say when they see starving cows and no more feed pile left. So that's, I mean, I guess my worry going forward is we probably hurt the pastures a little bit in some areas if we don't get a lot of good early moisture.
And even with that though, Blue, even if we do get that good early moisture, we still have to be very aware of when we send those cows back out on that grassland, because we could have a really big detriment on that growing plant, because it'll be very, very tempting. Once we see that green come through, that will want to try to start sending our pairs out to pasture, and it's already stressed. And then add an additional stress of putting grazing onto that. We definitely need to be cautious and be aware of that, and maybe have to feed our cows a little longer this spring before turnout. So something else too I'm very concerned about, and it's always concerned in Western South Dakota, Western North Dakota, Eastern Montana, Wyoming, is the water, because we didn't have any runoff into our dugouts and dams and creeks. That what it was like last fall is basically what it's going to be like this spring, summer, when the thaw comes off those waters. So just be diligent, due diligence right away when looking at your water quality, because obviously we're hoping to get those cows and those heifers bred up in a timely manner too, here in June, July, depending on when you're breeding. And along with the nutrition, I mean, water is nutrition. It does play a big impact on breed up also, or it can influence when they get bred up depending on where they're at. So that is something also I want to throw caution out at for everyone out there. It's never too early. I think today I actually got a couple samples in from down in the Butte County area already there testing. So put that on everyone's radar right off the bat. So.
And one of the biggest issues with surface waters is sulfates. And as it evaporates, it concentrates. So, I mean, what you said as far as what was out there in the fall, it's all of that level and probably more when we kick them out. And what we end up running into is we're usually moving them from our home area, which is almost always a well or some type of pipeline water that is usually really low in sulfates, especially compared to our surface water. So even if it's in a marginal status, like let's say 1500 parts per million, we've had cows die on 1500 part per million water because they went from almost a zero with the pipeline and turned out to is the only source. They even had to drink that, which, like I said, if they adapt to it, it's absolutely fine. We may see a little bit of performance issues, but you usually don't see death. But we had some dying at 1500 parts per million with polio. So, I mean, even though you did everything right, you tested, you did all that, sometimes they got to be acclimated. You may have to provide some, you know, water out there for a little while so they can slowly integrate into those dams to be utilized, or creeks, even rivers. We've seen them in these dry years get really concentrated. Turnouts will be over 3,000 parts per million on them because there's no flushing effect. So you have to be really cautious of them. And one other thing on the grazing, we see this a lot post-drought where we've overgrazed, but that green up the new growth, we see a lot more tetany with that. So because we don't have that old forage base out there to kind of neutralize that. So when they're eating all green, fresh, lush grass, we do see a lot more tetany pop up. So planning on your high mag, I mean, supplements prior to going out there and while out on that forage will be a big thing, I feel, coming into this spring and summer.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Blue. I was at a branding one May, and all of a sudden I got pulled away to go help with some down cows due to grass tetany. It was a dry year. Dry, 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 dry. I mean, you couldn't find anything in town to help treat those grass tetany cows because it was leaving the shells that fast, even though it was a very dry year. And a lot of people do have that misconception that, you know, not much out there, don't have to worry. But again, it's that green growth. So without any old forage to consume with that. So.
And if we get any kind of moisture, it's going to green up and look beautiful out there. I mean, it's just going to look like a green carpet, but as nice as it looks, it can be kind of that deadly situation. I mean, if we haven't supplemented properly.
So to kind of reference back to being dried last year, what have you seen out in the field or through your veterinary practice? I know nutrition, we talk about nutrition a lot. You talked about having various harvested feedstuffs varying in quality from corn stalks to CRP, poor quality, to better quality alfalfa. I also noticed in the country that there's a lot of various alternative feeds, I'm going to use that word, that we don't normally see come in. So what have you been seeing in the in your clinic?
I hate drought. I'll start with that. Everything that you thought was textbook, you just throw right out the window. And I mean, it makes it challenging. I sympathize for every producer that has to, you know, change our normal ways to manage these droughts. I guess kind of going back to last year, because of the drought, a lot of that forage is just our normal, you know, grass, alfalfa, hay mix scenarios. Were minimal, especially on the alfalfa side, because I don't have many producers that were able to put up a quality alfalfa. And, you know, I guess growing up in a ranching family, I guess I didn't know enough of, you know, why we had what we had for forages. But we always fed our grass hay, you know, from when we started in probably November feeding up until December, January. And as we started getting into our, you know, final trimester, a little more alfalfa was introduced. And especially as calving started, we really, if we had second cutting, started implementing that at calving time. And I always just thought it was for milk production. But as I've been on the vet side of things, you know, vitamin A is huge in calcium with our alfalfa. And it's, I feel really overlooked by a lot of producers. And I mean, as that kid growing up in it, I overlooked it. I didn't understand it, I guess. And when we don't have that forage, it's amazing how much problems just on those two levels that I've run into over the years of battling, you know, 2, 3, 4 different drought scenarios. Vitamin A is one of those just reoccurs over and over, and especially in our ranchier type cows that we've kind of talked about before, but where they're not getting a lot of, you know, forage supplementation, we can see it on a more normal basis of being vitamin A deficient. So we see more stillborns, more weak doing calves, poor performance on some of those until that green grass gets going, we fill those needs for vitamin A. I guess the bigger challenge that we've had to battle has just been that forage diversity that we've had to go into. We're seeing a lot of grain forages that are being utilized, that CRP, like we mentioned, corn stalks. We were able to use a lot of corn grazing this year, corn residues, which they seem to have done really well. I mean, I think we managed our protein energy pretty good when you look at the cows. They're in good body condition for the most part. But we had this worry, are we deficient micronutrient-wise? I mean, and unfortunately, a lot of people didn't tailor the mineral supplements or whatever supplementations we're doing based around that. A lot of people have mineral supplementation out there, whether it's in blocks or tubs or loose minerals, but most of them haven't been balanced to meet our deficiencies that we're lacking in forage. So it's been a concern of mine going into this year with, you know, all these different forages people are using to get by. We've got, you know, kochia bales and, I mean, all these different things we're not used to feeding. And I mean, a lot of grains. I've talked with different nutritionists that they said they've seen a lot of mycotoxin production, especially in the forage, grain forage haze, which make it challenging because we see a lot of late term abortions. And something we're running into that I don't know the answer right now. We're working on it. We're trying to figure it out. But we've had a few different herds losing some cows, kind of acute death, some going down, and they're down for a couple of days before they die. But I don't have the answer yet. I'm worried it's a deficiency, possibly a toxicity, or, you know, something on the mold mycotoxin side of things. So every time we start changing up our normal, we start running into these other deals, and we think we have it all figured out. We've been feeding it for months, and we're fine, but different stages of gestation really seem to trigger some of those, you know, abortion cascades, or you have 5, 6 stillborns and they kind of work through it, but we don't really find that answer. And I think some of those micronutrient mycotoxin things add up into these scenarios.
I agree with having some of those mycotoxins being high in some of the feed that I've also seen come through this past winter. Too much to even consider wanting to bring home because you'll never be able to feed any of it because it's so high. So there's definitely been those challenges and some of those unknowns, like you said, you just don't know what's happening to these cows. Like you said, it's one thing to lose a calf or two, being some calf issues, but to see this cow death loss at this time of the year is not as normal, you know, well, not normal most of the year round, but, you know, it's been such an unknown, and I'll be very interested to hear what is happening as you learn more, because I don't think it's just concentrated in one county. I think it's spread throughout a lot of these drier counties. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I had a sheep scenario is on some ewes as they started getting into lambing season. I think it was like the first 12. Use something like that had failure to dilate, basically what you'd want to call like a ringworm situation, but it wasn't that. We knew there's something off causing this, and we did do a necropsy on one of the ewes. Basically the lambs were just started rotting before she could even fully dilate, and as we from a liver analysis, we were mildly low in copper, but we were really elevated in molybdenum. So that high moly we feel is tying up the rest of the copper that was available, and it was more of a copper deficiency. And the producer started working with the nutritionist, and they altered the mineral package before we even got our results back, because it takes a little bit of time. We're trying to do whatever we could so we didn't keep losing lambs and ewes along with it. And basically, whatever change they made before we got the results back was enough to help correct that. They started having normal lambs, and it was working out well. And that was a North Dakota one, kind of north of Hettinger here. But now I've had some, you know, dying cow deals in South Dakota. I've also had a producer I visited with yesterday. They haven't lost cows or calves. Well, maybe one heifer possibly, but I mean, it was a difficult labor and she died a few days later. So we're not sure if that was linked to it or not, but it sounds like they're retaining a lot of fluid in the uterus. So it's a new one. I mean, we have high drop situations that we see every sporadically within herds every now and then, but this is like over 20% of the heifers are having this, as they've been visiting with neighbors and people outside and kind of in their county. They're seeing it in multiple locations where this is happening. So this is a new one that I'm feeling is probably more nutritionally related, just from, you know, animal management that we are kind of going through, but I just don't know how to pinpoint what our problem is. So we're trying to work hand in hand with nutritionists to figure out some of these problems and see how we can correct it.
Well, and Blue, we just briefly talked about this a little bit before we started recording this podcast, but high drops is seen a lot more in dairy animals than it is in beef. Yep. So the fact that you are seeing it in more beef herds is very ironic, especially in a drought situation, because I would consider our dairy females to have probably some of the top nutrition, you know, there is. And so it almost seems completely backwards. I don't know. So Robin and I saw our first case of high drops just this last December. And it was honestly the first time I had ever seen it, and quite an interesting disease or whatever it is. But it's an interesting concept that you're seeing out there, and it's too bad really that this is happening. So you also made a comment earlier that, how'd you say that? We need to be preparing for a drought year, but we kind of had a drought year last year. And something that one of our coworkers always says is that, you know, you hope for a good year, but you plan for a bad year. I guess, what are some of your thoughts for guys moving forward to kind of try and combat some of this?
Tough. Because some of the damage is gone. I mean, if the moisture don't come, we just can't fix that scenario that's out there. So, I mean, if it doesn't improve moisture-wise, I mean, it might be a culling situation, as much as we hate looking at that, or we're looking to, you know, pasturing outside the area, which it's expensive. I mean, you're going to have a lot of travel, because this isn't just a one or two county area. I mean, this is getting into different states to correct this. And I know as we get west of here, it's worse into the Montana side of things. It was worse than what we faced here. So to be able to just fix it, is some of that is outside of our control, unfortunately. But you know, last year in this area, we had a couple big fires that really made it difficult for other producers. I mean, on top of everything else, trying to manage that. But through that, I mean, conversations with clients that, you know, fortunately, there was a lot of people that trying to help out. They were donating hay and things like that. And discussions I had with clients were, even though you have enough hay to get you to June, you may need to start planning for out till July, because that pasture may not be able to be utilized right away. Let it develop, let it grow. I mean, and we're kind of in that scenario with some of these pastures right now, is even though it didn't burn, it's as shorter as in bad a situation as being burned. And if we don't get a really abundance of moisture to get that coming back right away, we need to manage that differently. And I mean, that's probably more, Robin might have more information on how to manage that. But I mean, we know that, I mean, certain plant stages and stuff like that, if we're out evaluating our pastures, it's going to look green. It's going to look nice with a, you know, an inch of rain out there, but it might be done growing if we don't get anything more than that. So we really have to manage these scenarios pasture by pasture to get through. And water is going to be another really, really big issue, especially those, you know, big pastures where there's not wells and we're relying on surface water. It's a pain in the butt, but if we're going to utilize forage, we may have to be planning on alternative water sources. I mean, whether it's surface pipelines to tanks or hauling water, you know, working with neighbors or whatever to be able to provide different, I mean, run off their wells or whatever to get through a grazing season, it's going to be a challenge.
Well, and we definitely don't want to put any more pressure on this grassland or this rangeland, unless you were able to really manage it well in the last year or two and be able to go out on it. But if you hurt that, it don't matter if you have all your cows or not. You know what I mean? It's, you've got to manage that grassland so that you can keep those cows around, unless you have a lot of harvested forages, and we already know there's not very many much harvested forages out there. Hay sales that are going on right now, I mean, there are one or two hay sales you still hear happening in the area, and that I wish I had hay on hand, I'm not gonna lie, that I could sell, because I would do very well on that. So harvested forages really is not an opportunity, if not you're paying a pretty penny for it. So we really have to manage that standing forage that we have. And whether that's having to call some females then and wait and hold off until we're able to bring them back or buy back, or if we do haul them away, be able to bring them back. So
I think kind of in this, I mean, as you asked Olivia, like, what can we do? I mean, like I mentioned, the moisture out of our control, but different things we can start looking into is, you know, maybe working or contacting different feedlot operations, see if we can dry lot some of these cows. I mean, start planning ahead until, you know, May, June get here and it's like we have no forage, or we're going to be months behind. Start looking into that. I mean, working with some producers to allocate lot space or whatever if need be. I know out here we see, I mean, CRP going away, but there are grazing opportunities and droughts with CRP. So, I mean, knowing some of those producers, working with them, having that kind of in your back pocket, whether it's for hay forage or grazing opportunity, you know, you may have to put up fence, you may have to haul water, trying to figure out, are these scenarios worth getting into to manage that herd for the year too?
Yeah, and I think you got to consider cost too. Is it going to be economically feasible to do something like that? And I do know, like, South Dakota has their grazing exchange. I don't know if that has on there, you know, if guys can dry lot cows on it or not. Do you know, Robin?
I believe it's more just grazing, but
just grazing. Yeah. So I mean, if one side of the state gets rain, that might be an option. But if the east side doesn't, then but I know that, you know, that could potentially be an option for guys too. But I do know that it costs a pretty penny to dry lot cows too. So definitely something to look into though.
And something though, I really throw caution out there if you are, and I do believe everything that Blue and Olivia said about, you know, finding partners or people that you can, that maybe can feed your replacement heifer calves, for instance, and get them bred there at that feedlot and keep them there at that feedlot, for instance. One group of animals you don't have to deal with, right? But make sure you're going to a reputable place. People can put ads in the paper. You're desperate. I need somewhere. My heifers need to go. They need to get off my place. They don't have the feed. I'm just going to take that person up on their offer. And I was visiting someone last summer that went through this situation where they went to visit that feedlot or that farm. Turned out that it was not the best situation. And so I really encourage you to research that facility, research out the individuals, visit those places, visit, you know, through the feeding period that they're there, visit just so that you know those animals are taken care of the way you want them to be taken care of. So there's really great opportunities there, but just be aware.
I would agree with that. I mean, we've had some people that have tried to, you know, maintain herds by going out of state to feed yards down Nebraska, different things. And I've had some clients said they would do it again. It was very beneficial. I've had some that it almost wrecked them. It was really, really devastating. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I thank you, Blue, joining us for this part of Cattle HQ 2 and talking about drought management and some of the things that you have been seeing within your veterinary clinic. And we very much appreciate your insight, your thoughts, and all your knowledge. And thank you, Olivia, too, for joining us on this episode, too.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, you're welcome.
Thanks, Blue.
You bet.
Thank you for joining us for this bonus episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, be the reason someone smiles today.